Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Mario Rosenstock, you're very welcome.
Oh, you caught me by surprise there, Brendan. Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
So, Mario, you're heading off on a massive tour of Ireland in March. So we've asked you to choose five songs that maybe tell us something about your path in life. So we'll get straight down to it. Your first choice is Gilbert O'Sullivan, Alone Again Naturally, from 1972. Why?
Okay, so I would say this is one of the most beautiful songs, but also one of the most depressing songs ever written. Yeah. In the first verse, he talks about suicide. In the second verse, he talks about his father dying. And in the third verse, he talks about how he doesn't believe in God anymore. But the reason I've chosen it is because I like Gilbert O'Sullivan, but mainly because it reminds me of Waterford. And that's where I was brought up. I was brought up on a farm in County Waterford, and a large part of my youth would have been spent in the good room with a vinyl record listening to Alone Again Naturally and Nothing Rhymed by Gilbert O'Sullivan.
Okay. And this was this your grandparents' farm?
That was my grandparents' farm in County Waterford. So I grew up on a farm and cows and silage and hay and dogs. And I mean, as I've reflected on it as I've got older, yeah. Brendan, a very strange place to be, a farm. A farm informs a darker sense of humour when you get older. Okay. It's a place full of death. Yeah. And you just take it for granted, for example, you know, so puppies are born out in the ditch. You go out and see the 10 puppies and you're hooked on them for 2 days. And then your grandfather's marching you down to the stream in 2 days' time and throwing stones into the bag and down the puppies go.
Okay. And I should probably say at this point that viewer discretion is advised here for this week. So there a kind of a bog gothic aesthetic that you grew up with then, as we call it now, I think, the darkness of rural Ireland, yeah?
Yeah, and you add that to Waterford and you add that to the 1970s. And I think you have the picture there, Brendan, of the psychologically impaired person I've become.
Okay, and you were kind of farmed out from your own house. Your parents' marriage was not good, is that right?
Yeah, it was a bit of a rickety upbringing, so I ended up living a large part of my early life with my grandparents.
Does that hang over you, your whole childhood, your parents' relationship difficulties?
Oh, yeah, I reckon so. I mean, any family whose mother and father kind of break up and get back together again and break up and get back together again, you know, it's quite confusing and discombobulating, you know.
Yeah. And what about your granddad and your grandmother? Were they nice, nurturing kind of people when they weren't killing animals?
I think it was one of those ones where they were having a second go at it.
Okay, you know, yeah, kind of thing. Yeah. And I was righting the wrongs of the past. Yeah.
Perhaps, and let's not go there. But they definitely were righting the wrongs with me. And in my case, my grandmother definitely helped with my love of the arts and everything. You know, we would listen to BBC Radio 4 together and I'd put on little sketches for her. And she actually sounded remarkably like Michael D. Higgins herself. Okay. So she would go, I think you're a wonderful artist and your floppy hair, you're like Ireland's Hugh Grant. Okay. And I think you could be a wonderful actor. And all this. So I remember thinking that, God, that sounds very vaguely like somebody else. And she really encouraged me. And actually, when I'm very nervous about doing a performance, I actually think back to her and how she used to always be, you know, I think everybody needs
extraordinary to have one person who gives you confidence.
Yeah,
like
I think everybody.
Kid,
I think everybody needs a champion that champions them when they feel they have a bit of a talent for something. Somebody that goes, "No, I see it. You're rock solid. You're bulletproof. I believe in you."
Okay, amazing. Yeah. And they liked Gilbert O'Sullivan then, on the other hand, yeah.
They did, but I mean, Gilbert was from Waterford and we were all very proud of him. I mean, on a musical level, I know he's very interesting as well because I think he's very underrated. You know, his ability with lyrics was incredible and his little internal rhyming schemes were incredible. And that song, that Alone Again Naturally, would you believe it, Brendan, was number one in the United States for 6 weeks in 1972.
Wow. Okay, here it is, Mario Rosenstock's first choice, Gilbert O'Sullivan, Alone Again, Naturally.
Looking back over the years, whatever else dies appears, I remember I cried when my father died, never wishing to hide the tears. And at 65 years old, my mother, God rest her soul, couldn't understand why the only man she had ever loved had been taken, leaving her to start. With a heart so badly broken, despite encouragement from me, no words were ever spoken. When she passed away, I cried and cried all day, alone again, naturally. Alone again, naturally.
I had never listened properly before. So Gilbert's the only one who survives the song, basically, the only one of the characters.
I'm sorry about that, Brendan. It's carnage, actually, all the way through the song. And it's the most depressing, but actually it is beautiful in its own way.
It is, absolutely. It's elevating.
How did the Americans buy into it? That's what I wanted to know. How did people in Arkansas and Kentucky go, naturally, that's my one.
They weren't listening either. They just heard the nice melodies and the Waterfordian lilt. Yeah. So your next choice is With or Without You.
Oh, God.
You two. Where does this bring you back to?
So this brings me back to Cork and my love and affection for Cork, because after Waterford, I went to school in Ashton in Cork.
Oh, yeah.
And whenever I mention Ashton to Cork people, actually, they go, oh, the artsy-fartsy place, liberal, pink-core liberal, oh, yeah. And I go, really? I didn't see it like that. But it was in Ashton and Cork. I was in boarding school there in a place called Rochelle House, a little boarding school. And it was in Ashton that I developed my love for the arts, and particularly theatre and performance. And it's when I discovered theatre and performance for the first time, and the magic and beauty of being on stage. And I was literally bitten by the bug. And I had
What was the first play you did?
The first play I did was Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller, which again...
Another uplifting piece of art, yeah.
It's very serious stuff. And I played 63-year-old Willie Loman, and I'm only 16 years of age, and I'm putting the grey into my hair every night. Anyway, four nights we did this, and it was a rather good production. And I remember at the end of the last night being absolutely devastated that I wouldn't get to do it tomorrow night, that I wouldn't get to inhabit this character's existence. And that then I knew I was completely bitten by this bug.
So what was it about it?
It was the jump from not being yourself to being in somebody else's existence. The feeling of being in somebody else's drama, somebody else's life, living another person's life, pretending. It was the joy of pretending. Okay. I've never gotten out of it. I've never gotten over it. This feeling of not being yourself anymore, being somebody else and pretending. And the teacher, who was the director, was my English teacher. And it was a bit of a Dead Poets Society sort of situation. His name was Stephen Daunt. And he just infused everything with this sense of, enthusiasm and cleverness and intelligence. And he was the one that suggested to me for the first time that, you know, maybe you should take it more seriously.
Okay. And how does you two come into this?
You too. So then I'm lying around this time. I'm lying in the dorm in boarding school, and we're all waiting for U2's new album to come out, because they just released Unforgettable Fire a year previously or so. And Dave Fanning had the exclusive, of course, as he always did. And he went, I've got two tracks from coming up with the U2 album. And we're all lying in bed in the dark. And suddenly this magical sound comes on, because for people who don't realise it even now, back in 1986, U2 were the most exciting band in the world. Mm-hmm. And everybody was waiting to see what they would come out with next. They were really hot. And especially if you're Irish. And so we lay in the dark and we'd heard this song for the first time. And I love the idea of hearing a legendary song for the first time. That somewhere, someplace, somebody played Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band to somebody, and they heard it for the first time. And we heard With or Without You for the first time from this fabled album, Joshua Tree. And I remember this peculiar whistling sound during With or Without You, which you'll hear, which I hadn't heard before. This unusual instrument they used, which was very, very a little surreal and a little gothic. Yeah. And you two had done it again.
Okay, here's Mario Rosenstock. Second choice today, You Two and With or Without You.
Without you.
That That's Mario Rosenstock's second choice today, You Too and With or Without You. So, Mario, after school then, you went to Trinity. What did you study?
I studied politics and economics. The thing about it was, I wanted to study, obviously, I wanted to do drama all the time. But the thing about Trinity was, if you did drama, you couldn't do this brilliant society called Players.
Okay.
And Players is where all the plays were done. So you could only do it if you were an undergraduate in another course. So basically, I did politics and economics, and I spent 4 years doing about 15, 16 plays in Trinity.
And did you get a part in Glenroe while you were still in college?
I did.
As a kind of a sexy doctor.
I did. Well, dishy doctor. I was called the Evening Herald. The Evening Herald called me the dishy doctor, Brendan. Yeah. So basically, Wesley Burroughs.
You were too young to be qualified in medicine. There were credibility issues there. Yeah.
Blame RTE, Brendan. So Wesley Burroughs, who'd had a heart incident, the writer of Glenroe, he'd had a heart incident, and he remembered that when they called the doctor to his house, the doctor, he said, looked about 12. Because this is modern, you know, doctors didn't have monocles and spectacles anymore. You know, it was a young fella, you know. And so he decided to write this in, Dick Moran, oh, Mary, I'm having a heart attack. Oh, don't worry, Dick, I'll call the doctor. Out going, in I come. And Mary, keep him away from me, he looks about 4. And that was the beginning of me as the doctor in Glenroe. And of course, my grandmother was, of course, thrilled to the floppy hair and Hugh Grant.
And all. Yeah, and what did they make of it, your college friends in that?
I was loaded.
Yeah.
So basically, I was the man to get the pints off. So in a play, you know, as a student, you're always scraping around, and you know, money's not easy to come by. And of course, I had a wage.
And you were a bit famous as well then, yeah.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I mean, not in Trinity so much, you know. You know, Brendan, I don't think the Glenroe demographic mightn't have been huge in Trinity. But when I stepped outside into maybe Pierce Street or whatever, they go, there's our man from Glenroe.
Okay, yeah. And did that lead to more acting work then?
It didn't, Brendan. you might have, you know, recognized I got into comedy.
So
like the typical life of an actor, I did this and I did that and I waited by the phone. And of course, I found that about 2 or 3 years after waiting by the phone and that I wasn't cut out for that. I needed to make things happen myself.
Okay, and we'll come to that.
Sure.
But your next song choice in the meantime is Oasis, Wonderwall. Why this?
Okay. So Oasis Wonderwall is because of my wife, Blonnet. And so when we met in around 1995, and everywhere I met her for a date, everywhere, it just came on. Mm. You know, like doom, 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 doom. And it just followed us around. It was a stalker song. And I grew to dislike the song because it was just,
I think a lot of people did, yeah.
Yeah, and you like it at the beginning and then you kind of get a bit tired of it. And I didn't pick it because it's a fantastic song or because it's topical because of the Oasis thing. I picked it because it just reminds me that of the early dating of my wife, Blonnet. And everywhere we went, this followed us around like a virus, like a disease.
And come here. So what's the dynamic between you and her? What's she like? Is she the kind of steady one in things or how does it work?
Well, for the purposes of radio, I suppose, yeah. I suppose to narrow it all down, Brendan, that would be the one. I would be probably the flighty one. And the excitable one, and Blonde would be my rock of sense. Yeah, yeah. She's stability. She loves stoicism, and she's got me into that now as well. And that's going down a treat.
Are you a bit of a drama queen at home?
I can be. Yeah, yeah. Now, and I have to temper my worst natures, but the children love it, of course. When I get on my high horse, you know, because here we go again. Here's the show starting. I can be from time to time, but. But I can settle down as well.
So she has had stoicism enforced on her, you could
say.
Yeah.
And it's welcome. It's welcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yin and yang, and especially as you get a little older as well, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Calm becomes a
You can't go around being flighty all your life.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I read somewhere once that you were saying that when you got together initially, that you didn't kind of, the idea of a steady relationship, you didn't really know what that was because I suppose you hadn't had it modelled at home or whatever.
Well, that's very interesting. You should say that. A perceptive, I would add. But yes, I think that's something that I probably thought about a lot as well. I didn't necessarily kind of go, this is going to work because I hadn't really seen it work before. So you're right. Yeah. So I was kind of going, what's all this, you know? And it's been one of the, I suppose, the biggest achievements of my life as well, if you want, because I see it almost as an achievement because to use the word rickety would be an understatement, but we've achieved something together, the two of us.
Okay, okay. And when you say rickety, about ye or about your...
No, my
family
my
of origin.
Okay. Family of origin, yeah.
Okay, okay. All right, let's have a listen to it. We'll take a little bit of Wonderwall here. We don't need to overdo it on the Wonderwall.
Today was gonna be the day, but they'll never throw it back to you. By now, you should have somehow realized what you're not to do. About you now, and all the roads that lead you there were winding, and all the lights that light the way are blinding. There are many things that I would like to say to you, but I don't know how. I said,
you see, it kind of bludgeons its way in. And that, in one way, that cello is like somebody sawing at your brain, though, isn't
it? It's true, but I just realised he sings, "You're my Wonderwall." Maybe she is. Maybe that's what I was hearing all the time, that she's my Wonderwall.
Yeah.
You're going to be the one that saves me.
Yeah.
I never thought of that.
And is
lady.
She the one that saved
yeah,
you?
Yeah, she sure is.
Saved you from what?
Well, I mean, repeating the sins of the past, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm really apologise for these musical choices, everybody. If you should get me on at some other occasion to pick my five favourite songs,
actual music,
because
yeah,
you know, then we can talk turkey.
Yeah, but this is the basis for a very interesting conversation.
Yes.
So your GIF Grub tour next year, it marks 25 years of GIF Grub on Today FM. Mm. So how did you make the move from being a kind of a semi-out-of-work actor into radio?
So I always loved radio. I remember BBC Radio 4 and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, I used to listen to Byrne in the morning every morning and all that. My mother, my grandmother called him Byrne. Yeah. She used to call him Byrne. She had a very mixed relationship with him, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes loving him, sometimes hating him. Like a lot of women in Ireland.
Yeah, yeah.
And
the dads all just hated him.
They just hated him. And the women
were mixed.
It was yin and yang. It was up and down. And she used to go, "I hate that tie on him. That tie is disgusting on him." She, you know, she criticizes sartorial thing and everything.
Yeah.
But I loved radio. I always loved radio. And so I sent my tapes into the nascent Radio Ireland when it started. And Dermot Morgan had launched Radio Ireland. And I remember listening to it live. And I remember going, that's really what I'm trying to do. I didn't even know it. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to pretend I'm all these people. But I want to do it myself and I want to do it now and I want to get in there. And luckily, Ian Dempsey came along and he was poached from 2FM. And he always loved working with comedy. He'd worked with, you know, Arthur Matthews and Graham Lenehan and stuff like that, and little bits on his show on Zig and Zag and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah, of course,
and all
yeah.
that. So he loved working with imaginary characters. And me and him sat down together, hit it off, a complimentary sense of humour, not the exact same. And I think that's been the secret of the longevity, actually, the fact that we like slightly different things, but we make each other laugh. And he was my start, and he continues to be. We continue to be a team together 25 years later.
He's your Wonderwall.
He's another Wonderwall. Yeah, I've been lucky to have a couple of Wonderwalls.
Yeah, you're walled in
yeah,
there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, your next choice is "Better" by Tom Baxter. Another one of your favourite songs?
No, I wouldn't. It's actually a cute song. It's a sentimental song. It's a bit of a weepy.
Yeah.
But it's from 2007, and 2007 is the year my firstborn Dash was born. And he was born in August 2007, and I remember the sun shining. And I remember thinking, listening to the words, because it's a love song, and the love song says, "See, what I'm trying to say is, you make things better." And of course, it's obviously a love song, but for me, I kept on thinking, it's about him, that he's this yeah. little boy is coming into my life, and he's going to make everything better. And so it was just an excuse for another person to love, really. And so I had another person to come into my life, who changed everything, because then you go from this kind of solipsistic existence where it's all about you to genuinely caring about another person and realizing they've just changed the ball game completely, that now my life is never going to be the same again because I now have to take care of somebody else.
Yeah.
And so his song, even though the song isn't about him, I kept interpreting that it was about him.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah.
And it's a beautiful little song. It's one of those songs, you know, it's his special song that Tom Baxter wrote. You can feel it. There's a little bit of magic in the song.
Okay. So, you know the way you weren't sure about relationships when you met Lorna?
Yeah.
Does Dash being born, did that bring up a lot of stuff then about like being a parent
it
and
sure
your
did.
Father and all that kind of thing, yeah?
You're reading me like a book. Of course it did. Yeah. Because as soon as he's born, you're going,
I can't do this.
I'm going to be the best ever lived.
Yeah.
And it'll kill me if it doesn't.
I see.
So basically, you are in a father vengeance mission. But you can overdo that as well.
Yeah.
So you have to learn, step back as well and just do your best. I've always thought, you know, people struggle with parenthood because they don't know what to do. And having gone through it myself, I always thought, just do your best. Because as long as you do your best, that will be good enough. Because there's no rule book. So just do your best and put your heart and soul into it and be there. I think presence is massive. Just presence.
Yeah.
Massive.
Totally.
Just to be there. Just to be there, even quiet.
Yeah.
Just to be there. They will register that. He was there.
Yeah.
He was there when I needed him. He didn't say anything. He didn't necessarily do anything, but he was there. And so that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be there.
That's fantastic, yeah. Do you talk to your own dad anymore?
I don't really, no.
No.
No. That's a void in my life, and it's one of those things that you have to come to terms with, which I suppose is the breakdown of a relationship, or possibly a breakdown of a relationship that possibly never was really existing in the first place. And sometimes it's better not to tamper with something than to go after something that doesn't exist.
Okay, because yeah, there must be a temptation to think everybody had a father in their lives. It's a primal thing.
Yeah.
I need to make this work.
Yeah.
No.
I think you're putting your finger on it there. I need to make this work, but you don't necessarily. Maybe it's better that you leave things alone as well for both sides.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, let's lighten the mood again now with Tom Baxter.
I'm a comedian, by the way, Brendan.
And here is Better. That's Tom Baxter and Better, and that is Mario Rosenstock's fourth choice today, chosen for his son Dash. Does Dash know you associate that song with him?
I told him yesterday, because I was coming on the show, yeah.
Ah, stop. How old is he?
He's 17.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was he moved?
Yeah. He's quite an emotionally attuned person, yeah. And so I'm able to talk to him about things like that. Not in a kind of a weepy way. But literally just told him I'd be coming on. And he went, oh, yeah. And I went, it's about you. And he went, oh, okay.
Ah, stop.
Yeah, and by the way, quick mention for Bellamy. She's my daughter.
Okay.
So she's 11 and she'll kill me.
She's not getting any song today.
No,
right?
No, not today, but she's getting the song when I go home.
All right. Last choice is a Bobby Womack song, Across 110th Street. Why this one?
Okay, I thought I'd finish with a bang. This is for somebody I knew, very special person called Tony Fenton. And everybody knows Tony Fenton, formerly of this parish and then later of Today FM. And I met Tony Fenton and we became firm friends. Tony is the definition of a person who was joie de vivre, the ability to live life in the moment, the ability to enjoy yourself. He had a great sense of occasion. He's gone 10 years next year, and he had a wonderful sense of fun, excitement, and he loved other people having fun, and he loved to have fun himself. And he loved black soul music, and he loved Bobby Womack, and he loved, you know, Jackie Brown and Quentin Tarantino, and this song is in that movie. And he loved black music, basically, and he was cool. And he was known as the dude. I know it's very cheesy, but he was known as the dude. Yeah. And he had a great sense of life. And, you know, he was all sorts of mischievousness he was able to get up to, you know. So his you know, memory will still very, very strong in my head.
Yeah, I can see that.
I remember all the stations in Ireland, the radio stations, stopped at midday when he died, and they played "Say a Little Prayer for You" by Aretha.
Yeah.
And I was going to choose that one, but I said, no, that's more for everybody and Tony. This was for me and Tony, because we used to listen to this kind of stuff. Al Green, "Let's Stay Together," and this one.
Okay, we play that in a sec. Just before we finish up, you're off on that nationwide tour in March, as I said. Where are you off to and what can people expect?
Okay, so it's 25 years of Gift Grub Live. It's a one-man show. It's
cheap then.
Cheap, but on costs are low. Massive big screens. I could be Miriam O'Callaghan on stage talking to, you know, Micheál Martin and Simon Harris on a big screen. I could be Michael Flatley with my flute jumping all over the audience. I will be new characters. I will be old characters. There will be lots of new material in this show. It's a brand new show, but also celebrating 25 years. I'm going to be in the biggest show of my life in the Dublin 3 Arena. And is, you know, do something that scares you, Brandon.
Yeah.
And I'm scared. So I'm going to be in the 3 Arena on Friday, the 28th of March. I'm in the Opera House starting the tour in my beloved Cork. And they're sold out. But if people want to go to the INEC, I know I shouldn't mention that sometimes. Okay. It's blasphemous.
Okay. And remaining tickets for any of the shows available from Ticketmaster.ie or venue box offices. Mario Rosenstock, thank you so much for coming in. That was terrific. And best of luck with the tour. And we finish off on your final music choice for Tony Fenton, Bobby Womack, and Across 110th Street.
I was the third brother of five, doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right. Trying to break out of the ghetto was a day-to-day fight. Being down so long, nothing didn't cross my mind. But I knew there was a better way of life, and I was just trying to find. You don't know what you do till you put under pressure. Across 110th Street is a hell of a tester. Across 110th Street.